B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hour number four, Felger and Mads here, presented by DraftKings. We're on a Monday. It's a re-entry Monday. Everything from the weekend. And that's presented by East Boston Savings Bank. Our friends at The Athletic, the Find website, they like doing polls here in this time, which we love. We love a good poll. They have now asked their readers to give them their thoughts on the NFL TV broadcast crews. And this is an NFL TV broadcast survey, and it's done by Richard Deitch, who's a longtime sports TV critic. Can't remember who was he with?
He was with SI for
a while.
Yeah, that's right.
Sports Illustrated before. Now he's with The Athletic, so he's a guy who's been covering this a long, long time. They ask the readers, and unlike some of these other surveys that we've read, they give you the number of respondents, 2,700.
Wow.
So that's a little bit more of a full sample. It's not quite a, you know, Sports Hub, Felger and Maz Twitter poll with, you know, 14,000 respondents, but 2,700 is a better sample. And I guess it's nationwide. And they ask them, like, the simple questions. Like, for example, Murray, do you have it in front of you?
I do not know.
So don't. I just want to ask you. What NFL broadcasting team at each network is your favorite? Well, what is your favorite broadcasting?
Michaels and Collinsworth, hands down.
Maz, what's yours?
I really have come to really like Romo, so I'm going Nance Romo.
Okay, so Nance Romo won it with 57. So actually, the way this is asked is sort of weird. Which NFL broadcast team among the top teams at each network is your favorite? So they didn't ask you, you know, one over the other. They asked you which group on each network is your favorite. So that's a weird way to ask that. I've already annoyed by the poll. But anyway, Nance and Romo had the most votes at 57.4%. Second was Michaels and Collinsworth. Third was Buck and Aikman. Mm-hmm. And then they include, I guess, the radio crew, Kevin Harlan and Kurt Warner at Westwood One.
Oh, I like them.
Harlan's great.
Yeah, he is. He's good.
Harlan's amazing. But they include that one. But Nance, Romo, Michaels, Collinsworth, Buck, Aikman. You have a problem with any of them?
No, not particularly.
No, not really. I think they're all pretty good, yeah. And that's probably, I would put Buck Aikman third, but they're all pretty good.
I think they're all excellent. You know, for someone who spends most of his day saying, this sucks, that sucks, this sucks, that sucks, I got to be honest. I think the lead NFL broadcast crews, pretty good.
Yeah, I don't get my back up about any of them. There's times I think Romo can be a little bit verbose, but overall, I think he gives you good information.
So I rank them Michaels Collinsworth 1, I'm with you, Buck Aikman 2, and Nance Romo 3. And the line of demarcation for me is the guy's willing to be critical. It's such a tough ask for those guys because the network is leaning on them. The league is leaning on the network. So we don't want you blasting the officials. We don't want you being overly critical. You know, we want you to promote the brand and promote the product. So they can't just sit there and rip people. But they have to be critical, and they have to sort of walk that line. It's tougher than it looks.
I think Collinsworth's actually dialed it back.
Oh, I think he has, too.
And I hate it, because there's a time every fan base hates Chris Collinsworth. Like, oh, you're calling out our players. Like, no, he's just calling it as he sees it. He's dialed it back. He's not what he was like 5 years ago.
Unfortunately. And I think because he gets pushed back from the league and the networks. And unfortunately. But so, like, to me, that's the most important thing. Can I get some critical? I understand what the guy did well on this play. Who effed it up and why?
Right.
Like, that's really what I want to know. I want you to know who came up short here and why, and your analysis of that. And I think Collinsworth goes there easily the most and most readily. I think Aikman is sneaky good at that, too. And I really feel the governor on with him, too. Like, he wants to say it and he doesn't, but I can feel him. I feel him wanting to do it. Romo just wants to show me how smart he is, and I think he is smart, and I think he is ahead of the play, and I think I learned something when I listened to him. I just don't quite get the critical bite from him that I get from those other guys.
So that's the part I like about Romo, is the predictive element of it, and I feel like when I watch it, I learn stuff that I don't watch with other guys. So the critical commentary, I mean, I'm not, you know, again, I like that too. It's a huge thing. It often takes time for players to grow into that because they're still a little too connected to the game. So I give them a little latitude on that one. But I think in terms of understanding what's going on the field, you know, to me, he's as good as it gets.
Okay, so then they did ask you to rank them against each other. Which network do you prefer when it comes to broadcasts? Just network. Okay, take out teams. What network do you like the best? 1, 2, 3.
Oh, CBS for me, number one. Then NBC, and then Fox.
Me too, 100%.
I like Fox the least. I was going to probably put NBC first. I like the way NBC does the games.
Me too. I like both CBS and NBC, and Fox can kiss the underside of my ass.
I can't stand the Fox games. They drive me bananas.
Cletus and like all the nonsense that Fox wants to give you.
It's too much nonsense.
There's just always, and I do hold the pregame show against them. I think it's just a clown show. Just a bunch of clowns, you know, trying to make me laugh. I'm not looking there to be laughed. I want to learn a little something from guys that played the game. And instead, it's just one giant clown show outside of Glazer. I can't stand that Fox pregame. I think it permeates their broadcasts a little bit. Not as bad, but so I agree. I would go CBS, NBC, Fox, 1, 2, 3. ESPN and NFL Network were distance 4.
I don't even consider them. I think those broadcasts stink.
Like the NFL Network, I can't even, they started picking up the CBS, they started picking up the network guys.
Yeah.
So it's Nance and Romo doing those games. Now, when it's just the NFL Network, I can't even tell you who they have in there now. Like, remember when they first started, it was like Bryant Gumbel and... How atrocious that used to be.
Right. It was horrible. Oh. Horrible. As badly produced a professional sports event as I've ever seen.
Okay.
I thought it was horrid.
Best color analyst by far. Tony Romo won this going away. Best color analyst, Romo had it 74%. Collinsworth was 13%. And then they don't give me the number for Aikman. He was called around 10%. And that's it. So Romo in a runaway there.
Yeah, as it should be.
I'd put him third. I'm sorry. I don't hear Romo telling me who screwed up nearly enough.
But how the people would vote, I can understand why the number's that high.
Oh, no, I understand saying that. I'm just saying what I prefer.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I think Collinsworth for sure, and Aikman to some degree have a more bite to them than Romo.
He's also the youngest, right? So I don't know what the demos were on the voting body, but he's the newest to the job. Like, I don't know. I think people tend to gravitate towards that because it's newer, more exciting, and... But again, in terms of predicting what's going to happen, he is great at it.
Best play-by-play guy?
Michaels.
I would say, I lean Michaels too, actually, yep.
Michaels in a runaway. Michaels at 42.7%. Who would be second for you?
I go Buck.
I don't know. Nance is corny, but I do like him on football. I like Nance on football.
So Nance by a hair over Buck. Nance at 17.9, Buck at 15.2, and Harlan at 14, which is deserved.
And he gets some of those CBS games.
Yeah, Harlan's a badass. Yeah. He's good. Yeah. He deserves it. I think he's an underrated guy. Boy, you see how much better Nance is without Sims next to him?
Oh, Gene. Yeah, like that's, boy, he just was like a mannequin at the end there. He was all right back in the day.
Sims, when he first came on, was fine. But, you know, what a huge upgrade. It's like it's a watch with Sims there the last couple of years. Woof.
He's a guy that'll actually engage and say something. And so, you know, it has some information. And, you know, Sims really had gotten to be just an empty suit in there, for crying out loud.
I mean, time and again, Nance would set him up and he had nothing. I don't know, Gene. All right.
They asked for sideline reporters, which I think is like, okay, so who is the highest voted? Who's the best? What NFL sideline reporter provides you with the best information, Murray?
I guess Michelle Tafoya.
She was.
Yeah, I would say, she gives information very consistently. Michelle Tafoya does. And who's the woman whose name is now escaping?
Tracy Wolfson.
With the mole.
Tracy Wolfson.
Oh, that's so wrong. Poor girl. Yeah. So she's got a little something there. Big deal. It's a birthmark.
Like it.
It's a beauty
Actually,
mark.
It kind of does it for me.
Old in my eyesight, I can't tell if it's Tafoya or Andrews.
Tafoya won.
Okay, because they're the same rough. The one's dark blue, one's light blue on their pie chart here, and I can't. So I'm sorry, Aaron Andrews
was second.
Okay, so Tafoya was one. Good.
Okay.
Good.
Aaron Andrews should be last. Fox's sideline people blow.
What is Aaron Andrews? You know, she'll get a. She'll get an interview, right?
Stink.
She'll get an interview, but does she give you information?
No.
So, like, I mean, hear your vote. Aaron Andrews, Laura Achman. Who the hell's
that? Laura Achman, yeah. Hmm. She doesn't do a lot of games that we see, though.
Pam Oliver, rated high. Christina Pink.
I don't know. Who the
no clue.
Is.
Lisa Salters, Michelle Tafoya, Evan Washburn, poor fella. Tracy Wolfson. All right, that's a lost art. I don't think I get anything out of it, most of them.
Tafoya and Wolfson are good, though. The two of them, I think, are pretty solid.
Pre-game shows. Who was the best?
Oh, jeez. This is like picking your favorite turd.
So this... So
you know what? I go NBC there.
100% NBC.
Yep. Yeah.
100%, and they finished
Fox
third.
Fox is last.
Fox was first in this.
Oh,
Fox
God.
Blows. Oh, that pre-game show sucks.
Hate it. Hate it. Clown show. What? One dancing clown after the next.
Yeah.
It's just a bunch of guy yeehaw. A freaking yeehaw radio. I can't stand it. Oh my God. Like, talk some football. Jesus. I get it bugs me. And then when Gronk got on that thing. Oh my God.
Painful.
Just painful. Just painful. It was so Fox was first. NFL Network was second. Interesting.
So that's Rich Eisen.
Eisen, Irvin, Mariucci, Warner. Warner's...
There's too many guys on that set. It's so, just like, whittle it down to three.
So Rich Eisen I like, Kurt Warner I like. Mariucci says
nothing.
Absolutely nothing ever.
Empty suit.
Says absolutely a nice guy. Like a nice, personable guy. I like his sort of personality and how he carries himself. Has he ever criticized anyone for anything ever?
No.
Ever? Once?
No, that the NBC pregame show, in my mind, really distinguishes itself in that way. There's some good biting commentary on that pregame between – even Dungy will criticize.
It's yes.
It's a lot more soft, soft-spoken, but he will absolutely criticize people. You know, that pregame show is pretty good.
Agreed. I think ESPN is value because I think Schefter is such a good information guy. You get something there. I like some of ESPN's secondary guys. Like, I think not Matt Hasselbeck, his brother, Tim. When Tim does, like, the video breakdowns, he's outstanding. Is it Tim or Matt? I think it's Tim.
I
think when Tim does, he and, like, Orlovsky and some of these guys that Greenberg, like, I think those guys are really good. The Samantha Ponder, Brewski, Randy Moss, Rex, like, I don't know. There's a lot of personality there, but
Rex is good because he rips the Patriots.
I don't care about the personality part. I want, like, stuff. Give me something. What does Randy Moss bring you? Which current NFL quarterback would make the best broadcaster?
Ooh.
So
this guy won in a runaway.
Current?
49%. So the leader was 49%. The next guy was 17%. Drew
Garoppolo?
Drew Brees. So bad. Drew Brees at 48.9% in a runaway.
Obvious choice, yeah.
Phillip Rivers was second at 17%.
How about Richard Sherman?
Russell Wilson was third at 13%. They said quarterback, Murray, quarterback. Wilson was third with 13%.
I think Phillip Rivers would suck at that job. I think he would suck at it.
Aaron Rodgers was fourth with 12.4%. And then Brady.
Nope.
Brady's got a sliver here, but they don't tell me how much it is. It's probably around 8-9% for Tom Brady.
Russell Wilson.
Brady would suck.
Russell Wilson would suck.
Wilson would suck.
Disingenuous robot.
Would any of those guys say anything?
No.
I mean,
no, you know what? I was almost trying to...
Aaron Rodgers might because he's a dick.
Yeah.
Right? Aaron Rodgers might because he's just that guy. But the rest of it would be diplomatic. I'm not looking for that. I'm not looking for diplomacy. I need someone to say something. What were you going to say, Maz?
I was going to say, I was almost thinking in terms of a veteran guy who's a backup. Like, because I feel like sometimes those guys have better, you know... I don't want to say acumen, but ability to explain it because they can't do it. Like, you know, Rodgers is out there freelancing half the time. I'll take give me a backup quarterback who's got some, you know, I still think Peyton Manning would be decent at it.
He might. But again, the dividing line is where you criticize. Because there's so many of these guys criticize no one ever about anything. It's like, I know I can see the guy dancing in the end zone. He scored the touchdown. He made the play. I got it. Who screwed up the play? Who tells me that? That's who I need. That's who I put value in. I don't think any of these quarterbacks would ever do that. There's one more very important question that they asked and was answered that I want to get to, and I want your thoughts as well right after this.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Never be left out of the conversation.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Never, not once.
Felger.
Good God, man. Have some pride.
Maz.
The guy's psychotic.
98.5 Sports Hub.
Stop it.
Brady slipping away. Motions downfield. It's incomplete. Jacoby Myers, the rookie, was covered there by Lonnie Johnson. Rookie out of Kentucky, and it's fourth down.
That man coverage was good, and that man right there is getting frustrated because guys are not getting open. Across the board there, I could see all four guys in the route out in man coverage, and nobody was open. But so far, my lasting impression of this game was Tom Brady going off the field that last time.
Oh, baby.
Right?
Oh,
that's,
baby.
That's what we're talking about here. It has been that way this entire season, and for all the greatness of Tom Brady, he has not been able to crack the code so far with this group of offensive players.
And they're 10-1 in good measure, of course, because that defense has been so suffocating. Special teams ain't bad either.
There's just a little Michaels Collinsworth from last year. They're my favorite. Collinsworth by far. He's on it. Collinsworth is on it. And I think he wants to dig into the controversy, if you will, you know, but that was the story with the Patriots last year, the way Tom Brady was carrying himself, his contentment level with the team, even at 10-1. And they get into that game that was at Houston. That was the game where Brady came off the field and kind of tossed his helmet, you know, they frustratedly sort of.
It was as F this a move as you'll ever see.
Right. And, you know, Michaels and Collinsworth, particularly Collinsworth, is all over it, all over it. And that was, I think, the week in the game that Collinsworth later revealed that Brady told him he was the most miserable, ain't no quarterback in the league, even though I think they were 10-1 at the time, or like I forget how it all times out. But it was, you know, at that stage of the season. And, you know, so Collinsworth takes that, uses it on the broadcast, takes it head on for the most part, and is just willing to dig into that stuff. And I think that's so valuable. I think there's so many guys that just want to leave that controversy to the side because they don't want to hear about it Monday from the team and the league and the network. They want it, you know, happy land. And I think Collinsworth, maybe not as much as he used to, but is still willing to go there and is sort of all over it. And so that's why I like him. I thought they did a good job of that Brady story last year. Ah, but here's a question that I want to get to. And I think it's maybe the, one of the single biggest innovations in NFL broadcasting in the last several years. And they asked the question, should every NFL broadcast include a rules analyst? Yes or no?
It doesn't really matter to me. So ultimately, no. I don't think you get much from those guys because they're always trying to protect the refs.
So I would say yes. But again, I'm a dork when it comes to this stuff. The rules in that league can change so frequently, and you know, technique is significant. And look, I'm with, you know, Murray makes a good point. Murray makes a good point about if you're going to do the job and protect the refs, then the answer is no. But if you can explain to me what the rule is, what happened on the play, and give me some insight, my answer is less. I lean yes on that. I'll always take more information.
I'm an overwhelming yes, as was the poll. 82.6% to 17.4 said yes. And I think, Murray, you just forget how bad it used to be before they had these guys in the booth. Something would happen on the field, and I would have to listen to Deardorff for 4 minutes fumble around to try to figure out whether the rule was if the ball hit the ground or if he had control or did he maintain possession. And meanwhile, he's fumbling around back and forth.
I guess that's a good point.
For
yeah.
3-4 minutes. It's like, no, Dan, that's not the rule. The rule is maintain control. It doesn't matter if it hits the ground. And I routinely, we used to yell at the Theismann, you idiot.
Dan Fouts.
It doesn't Fouts. It doesn't matter if he goes backwards. It's all the, you know, like I can't, you know, whatever specific rule it is. But we always used to yell at the TV because the guy didn't know the rule. No.
Yeah. So at least there is someone that can come in and sum it up succinctly. What's supposed to happen there? I know I've seen it before, and it does irk me that they're quick to defend. You know, when it goes up to when they send it to New York.
Well, they don't go after the refs. You're right.
Like,
you're
that
right.
is kind of annoying.
So for someone who wants critical commentary, you're right. I think the guys mostly, but at least
They can explain what the hell's going on.
If you put on a broadcast from whatever 10 years ago, you know, before Pereira and before these guys started doing it, I guarantee you, you'd be stunned to see something happen on the field. And there's Ian Eagle and Dan Fouts fumbling around for 4 minutes trying to... Is that... Well, no, that's not the rule. His arm was going forward. Well, no, if his arm's going forward... And three, 4 minutes later, you're yelling at the TV like, hey, idiot, that's not the rule. That doesn't exist anymore. Like, pretty much whether it's, you know... Well, they ask you, who does the best job?
Oh, Pereira.
Yeah, he's really good. I do like Pereira. I mean, so I'd be hard-pressed to remember the most. Territories won, right?
Yep.
But I lean Pereira. I think Pereira is very good.
So he won in a runaway. Pereira at 48.5%. Sterator, second at 27.6. And then Dean Blandino at 18.2.
Oh, Blandino's terrible. Okay. You know what? Fox, the more you think about it...
Fox sucks.
Yeah, seriously, Fox does suck.
I hate Fox.
Other than, you know, and again, I like the Buck Aikman tandem. I think they do a good job, but the rest of it smells.
Agreed. I like Buck and Aikman too. The rules analysts have changed, and it's been so long now, and we're so used to it that we don't even notice it. But if you go back and watch old games, and you're trying to figure out what the hell just happened, and the broadcasters are just making it worse.
Dick Stockton and Mark Schlereth trying to figure out
that all the time, right?
You ever see that, Mark? Never seen that, Dick.
His arm was going forward, so obviously that's no. Well, there's the tuck rule. They're fumbling around. No one knows the rule. It's important to have those guys there because there are so football just has too many rules, and it's. You know, so now whether they really get on the refs or not is another story. I think that's fair. But I think having those guys in there is a huge advancement. I really do. And then they asked, what technical innovation has made the biggest impact on your viewing experience? And, what do you think it was? So if I dialed this back, I don't know when they started, maybe 20 years ago. So there's one answer here that won in a runaway. What technical innovation has made the biggest impact on your viewing experience?
I would say that new camera angle that they ultimately got from the XFL, right? That's the one that I really... The Sky Cam or whatever the hell they call it.
Okay, nope.
So, again, I don't know what you determine as relatively... To me, like, super slow-mo changed everything. So, I don't know if you count that as a technical innovation or whether that's way back when.
So, here's the one that won their poll by a long shot at 56.1%, the yellow first down marker.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
So true. I mean, it's Now, I said 20 years. It's been there for a long time. Like, I don't know if that's still in the innovation phase, but that's a big one. Like, that's an important, usually I'd be against that. Just broadcast what's going on. You know me. I don't want fake crowd noise, fake anything. But that yellow line does make a difference. It also leads to all sorts of, whoa, there's always a cheated. Like, the line on the screen is not exactly sometimes what it is on the field. So, like, it leads to all sorts of belly aching and crying. But it is important. Like, we've watched so many classic games now, right? Like, and so many old games that are on TV now, whether it's Celtics or Bruins or whatever. When you put on a broadcast now, Maz, and they don't have the time and the score on the screen, don't you go nuts?
It's totally. The other one, like, I almost was going to say to you, the fantasy ticker. Like, because I thought fans would gravitate towards that where they get the scroll at the bottom. And, so I almost picked that. But there's so much information on the screen now that you don't even really need audio about 90% of the time.
So I don't care about the out-of-town scores or fantasy results, but... How much time is left in the period? What's on the clock?
Clock always needs to be shown.
Show me the clock in the scoreboard.
Yeah.
And like for our whole lives, they didn't have the clock up there. They didn't have the score up there. And
so that first and 10 line was only implemented 22 years ago.
22 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's huge. Like I agree. So anyway, just to finish that part of it, the second biggest innovation on your viewing experience is the red zone channel. The third is mic'd up referees to explain penalties, which I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
Hockley.
Well, no, but that's been going on since the 70s. Like, that's my entire life they've been mic'd up. I can't remember a time when they're not. And, oh, by the way, it's hugely important. Think about how confused you'd be unless you had that. Like, they have to have that. But that's ancient. And then they also put pylon cam on there. All right, so thus concludes the poll. Your thoughts on all of it, I promise, to your phones after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Not complaining.
Oh, you're the mean boss. Aw.
It's just Felger.
No, 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 no. It's always no.
Felger Mass. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Phones as promised. Here's Kenny on the Cape on that athletic poll on NFL broadcast. Go ahead, Ken.
No, I thought you guys are pretty right. I personally, I love Collinsworth and Michaels because we all grew up with Al Michaels. And Collinsworth, he'll make a game feel big, even if it's just some regular season dud. And then with the Aikman, you guys are spot on. He's always very quick to criticize the defense, though. Thanks, guys.
Okay, right. There's a quarterback union. So you got to, like, wade through all of that, which always bugs me. If you get an ex-offensive lineman up there in the booth, it's like, you got to run the ball. It's like, you know, that guy. And if it's a quarterback, it's like they go easy on the quarterbacks. And the defensive backs, well, that's not pass interference. Like, they all play to their own
position.
Like, you could drop that a little bit. Who's willing to criticize? To me, really, that's just sort of, that's the dividing line. Who's willing to criticize? I know Aikman wants to. Wish he would do it a little bit more. Collinsworth, I know, wants to. Will. He's been muted, though. He's been neutered a little bit. But so those are the guys that are valuable to me. The thing is, I think all the lead play-by-play guys, like, I think Nance is good. I think Buck is excellent. I think Michaels is, you know, a legend. Like, I think those are all excellent play-by-play. I don't have a problem with a single guy.
No, me either. No, and that question about future... So it was just to quarterbacks, future players. If you're just talking, you know, guys that aren't quarterbacks, I mentioned Richard Sherman. If he ever wanted to do it, you know, he wouldn't be afraid to rip anybody, I would think. He'd be really good at it.
I hope. But, you know, you never know. Like, a guy feels like when he plays, he'd be a no-brainer. Like Ray Lewis. Okay, when he played, you know, no-brainer as a broadcaster, right? Like, anytime you put a mic on Ray Lewis, it was, like, entertainment. It was worth it, whether it was goofy or, you know, he was out of his mind or what. But it was...
Now it sounds like you're getting someone on acid.
It's like, it's, you know, David Lee Roth never gave a bad interview. Then they gave him a show, and it was like, oh, my God. And it's the same thing with Ray Lewis. So, like, I wonder about Richard Sherman. Like, he feels like a no-brainer. But what if he was the guy in the lead role and the next thing the light's on and then, you know, maybe somebody else?
So you mentioned play-by-play guys. ESPN could use one. Like, they could use a play-by-play guy.
Seriously.
And then beyond that, I tell you who I think would be great calling games. I don't know if he would ever want to do it. I don't mean as play-by-play. I mean as an analyst, is Rodney. I think Rodney would be great at it. Like, you know, he had a great sense of the game, what was happening on the field. He's clearly not afraid to speak his mind. I think Rodney Harrison would be absolutely great in the booth.
So, again, they asked what current NFL quarterback would make the best broadcaster. Drew Brees won it in a runaway, 48.9. Second was Philip Rivers at 17.3. Then came Russell Wilson at 13%. Then came Aaron Rodgers at 12.4. And then Brady looks like under 10. They didn't give me the exact number, but around under 10% for Brady. And then Pat Mahomes got a couple votes. I don't know why you would ever vote. Who knows? Who knows what, you know, he would be as a broadcaster. We've got Dennis on Cape Cod on the same topic. Go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah, how about this clown?
How about you speaking into your phone? Dennis, Dennis, Dennis. Seriously, he was across the room.
That was
he was talking into his shoe.
He
was literally back here.
Told his wife to pick up the phone upstairs, and he's going to make the call from the basement.
I don't know what you're talking about. What do you guys mean?
Dennis, hold it like a pizza. Try again.
Monday Night Football.
Yes. So, Monday Night Football, they got a little bit of an issue. Have they figured out who their team is yet?
I thought they got rid of Tessitore.
They did. Yeah. They got rid of Tessitore, or I don't know if they reassigned Booger or what. I don't know what they did there. But
I have no idea who's doing the play-by-play. I always thought Sean McDonough was a good play-by-play guy.
Yeah, so
So sources say it's going to be Herb Street and Chris Fowler, who I like for the college game.
Fowler's good.
Yeah.
You know, the play-by-play guy should be easy. You know, the fact that Tessitore didn't quite fit is, like, rare. The play-by-play guy should be sort of plug-and-play. I mean, I think some guys are exceptional. Like, I think Kevin Harlan is exceptional, and Michael's obviously exceptional, and I think Joe Buck's very good, and I think those league guys are – they make a difference. But other than that, I mean, you should be able just to plug a guy in there. Mike Tirico is good when he does play-by-play.
Yeah, I like Tirico. Fine.
But, you know, like, how bad Jason Witten was. You've got to wonder, like, what did he say in the tryout? What did he say in the mock broadcast that you did that led you to believe he could do it? Because he was a million miles away from it when the light was actually on. You got to wonder about that. Because Romo, apparently, when he did it, just hit it through the roof, which forced them to oust Sims and put him right on the lead team. And people said, what the hell's that all about? The guy's never done a game. But they obviously knew from the tests. So what did they hear in Witten's tests that led him to believe he could do it? Ian in Illinois. Go ahead, Ian.
Yeah, good afternoon, guys. I agree with you on the Fox pregame show. I think it sucks, too. It reminds me a lot of the baseball booth from the original Naked Gun movie where they got seven guys up there. And the other question I had for you guys is, when do you think a couple of these networks are going to come around and maybe put a gambler, like a bookmaker from Vegas or somewhere in the pregame show? I know they started to do fantasy. ESPN does their own fantasy thing, but with gambling legal now in 25 states, I would think that they would want to have one or two people in there to talk about maybe moving on it before the game.
Ian, absolutely, 100%.
Yep.
They're going to have to.
One of the best segments from our childhood. That
Jimmy the Greek.
Yeah. Too bad he was a racist. But, right. You know, outside of that, that little flaw from him, not a good guy, but his segment was great, the handicapping. Has anyone ever really done that since?
I don't think so.
No, but like, again, you know, ESPN, Swami, and like, you know, they do that. But they actually, I'm sorry, Maz, they actually asked this. Hold on. They asked if you wanted the gambling stuff on the broadcast, and overwhelmingly, yes, what was the response. I don't have it in front of me, but they absolutely should have that.
Who's the guy we had on in Vegas?
Oh,
who told us about Brady's house?
Vegas guy, Nick Lang. What's his name?
Yeah.
Sean Lang.
Yeah. Especially he's going to tell me he's got inside info on the real estate market. Like, but Brandon Lang. That's Brandon Lang. But look, again, those gambling segments, the caller's right. You got legalized gambling now. I think you're going to see them all commit to it.
But it should be like a sweaty whack job like him, though.
Right, yeah, exactly.
No, it's got to be a dirty handicapper. Yeah. They all do it. Like, Dion picks this team, and, you know, the Rodney picks that team, and Boomer picks this team. Like, it's not against the spread. Like, no. Handicap it. Talk about the teaser. Like. A gambling segment. There absolutely should be a gambling segment and a gambling guy on there.
Aesthetics alone, like that's what the bankroll boys need to be hired. Like one of these networks should get on that, have Lifshatz and Murray there, but like, okay, these are gamblers. Like,
oh, yeah, because, you know, you want to hear about the quarterback with a stomach virus and was, you know, like unable to keep his meal down the night before. I want all the details, man. I want them all.
I'll tell you what. These athletic readers are the biggest pusses out there. This is the same group that said Tom Brady leaving was just we meant to be. So they asked what percentage of a game broadcast should be dedicated to sports gambling information. And 51.3% said 0%.
Typical.
Bunch of ninnies on this site. And then another 37% said only up to 10%. So, you know, almost 90% of the respondents say 0 to 10% on gambling. Bunch of ninnies on this site. Jesus.
So again, millennials and gambling. Here we go. They're afraid to do it.
Good God. So we can continue with this. We want to reset our baseball stuff. We want to reset our baseball conversation, which we let off the show with. And it's tied into last night, Sosa and McGuire, that special on ESPN. You know, back in the late 90s, steroids, the home run, saved baseball after labor strife. It saved baseball after the players and the owners lost a season, couldn't get together at the negotiating table, and baseball was in a bad way, and that saved the game. Baseball's once again in a bad way. Players and owners can't come together. They're going to lose games over labor strife. And so I ask you, is there anything that can save the game like McGuire and Sosa saved the game over 20 years ago? We'll pick up that question right after these words.
First, I want you to handicap Brady's next landing spot.
Exactly.
It's one of two places. It's San Diego or LA. It's San Diego or Vegas.
You don't think
the Patriots are out?
You think the Patriots are out?
No, I'm saying if he doesn't go to the Patriots.
Oh.
Word on the street is he bought a home in Vegas.
Okay.
Really?
Stand by. Now we're talking.
Okay. Okay, stand by.
Boston's home for sports. Failure and Mass. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Mike Felger, Tony Maserati, making your afternoon commute better.
Throw some, Felger. How about a mere copper? You are wrong. Running backs do matter.
Or worse.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay him.
A 98.5 to Sports Hub.
What are your thoughts on this impasse between Major League Baseball and its players? This disconnect, not only from each other, but also seemingly a disconnect from what we're experiencing as a country.
Right. It's a mess, Hannah. It's a real mess. There is so much anger and distrust between the two sides. So they couldn't reach an agreement. And now Major League Baseball is going to implement a season. And maybe the union will file a grievance. And Major League Baseball might file a grievance. And this is going to end up as certainly the strangest season that anyone can ever remember. Hannah, I covered the 81 strike. That was so vicious. I covered the 94-95 strike, and that wasn't much better. But this one differentiates even from those two, given what's going on in the country right now. And to have this bickering over money is a really, really bad look for baseball, certainly at this time.
So this insane MLB labor impasse continues. And I guess the negotiations are pretty much over. The players rejected the latest proposal, said we're not going to counter. Just tell us when to show up, when and where to show up, says Tony Clark. So I guess they're just saying we'll take the 50 games, full prorated salary. Just tell us when and where. And it's pretty much over, which is just insane to think that they can play the 50 games, but they can't figure out how to get to 82. They can't figure out 30 extra games to get to just a full half season, which they easily could do. They have time to get in 82 games, more of a real season.
More, I mean, honestly, Mike, it's not even 30, right? It's like 25. They could easily add 25 games.
Right. So I guess the latest was 76, but I'm just picking 82 as like,
sure.
You know, they have more than enough time to fit in 82 games. They had more than enough time to negotiate that contract, figure that out, get them into spring training again, get them onto the field and play a full half season. And they've got 50 games in their back pocket. Again, Tony Clark, just tell us when and where. It's time to get back to work. Tell us when and where. Any further dialogue would be futile. Time to get back to work. Tell us when and where. So they got the 50 games. They just couldn't figure out how to divvy up the money for the final 32 or 26, whatever it is. That's embarrassing. That's a joke.
It is embarrassing. Totally agree.
So there's more details, but they're really not worth getting into. What's worth getting into is that baseball, once again, is killing itself with labor strife. Okay, never mind just the general arc of the game, which is down. But it's once again going to have to somehow come out of the rubble of lost games over labor, over a labor dispute. And the last time this happened really was the mid-90s when they lost the 94 World Series and part of the 95 season. And as we saw last night on the ESPN 30 for 30, what helped save it was the steroid era and the Maguire-Sosa home run chase. And so that's what saved baseball in the 90s, gave it a quick injection, and brought it right back onto the front page and into our national consciousness. I ask you now, what does baseball have left to do that again? Anything? Is there anything it can do? Is there any record? Is there any player? Is there any chase? Is there anything, even if it's blatant cheating like it was in the 90s, is there anything baseball can do to give it a similar jolt that it had in the mid-90s? Murray?
No, there isn't. I mentioned earlier, maybe the Cubs winning the World Series would have been the last thing that they could have done, but that happened just a handful of years ago. So, you know, and that was a great story, I think, for even the most casual sports fan. Like, people tuned into that, and people like me tuned into pray that they would lose, because that was the last dangling carrot in baseball. You know what, the Cubs to win. So now that that's gone, what the hell's left? Nothing.
Yeah, so, the answer to me is also no. Again, and here's why I think baseball completely effed this thing up, is that, you know, the Maguire-Sosa thing we all know was rooted in the steroid era. Wouldn't surprise me if the ball was also jacked at the time. I mean, let's not forget that in the 99 All-Star game, they were playing with golf balls, basically. So, you know, how many of those made it into games? I mean, to me, it was the point being is this. They engineered it at the time. They engineered it. They introduced all these home runs into the game. They had one of the most sacred records in sports at that time, which was the single season home run record. And the steroid era, the real residue and cost for baseball in the steroid era was that it obliterated all connection to the past and history. It obliterated it. All the sacred records were destroyed. They were completely annihilated. So what do the home runs mean now? They played that card. That was a big card to play for them at that time. That was their trump card, always those records, the history. Can somebody do something that has never been done before? And now it's gone. Poof, gone. So how do you get people excited about home runs now? You don't.
It's not just, they didn't just play that card in the mid-90s. As I mentioned to you earlier, they're playing it now. They're playing it now. Last year, Major League Baseball hit the most home runs in the sport's history by far. By far, the previous record for home runs hit in a season was set 2 years ago at 6,105. Last year, 2019, Major League batters finished with 6,776 home runs. 67 home. That is an 11% gain. 11% above the old record. It was 21% higher than 2018's totals, which was 5,500. So the ball has never left as many home runs as was hit in the steroid era last year, and the last couple have blown it away, and you don't give a rat's ass about baseball. You don't even know who the home run hitters are. You don't even know who the big guys are. You don't know, and I've already forgotten his name. Who's my guy from Cincinnati who was second?
Lucas Giolito.
Suarez.
Suarez.
Eugenio Suarez. And the third is Jorge Soler. Those are your second and third leading home run hitters in Major League Baseball. Alfonso, what's the guy off the Mets? What's his name?
Oh, Pete Alonso.
Pete Alonso was your league leader. You don't even
almost said Edgardo Alfonso.
You don't even know who the league leaders are anymore. All right, so the ball has never left you thought it left the park a lot in the mid-90s in the steroid era. It's leaving the park now more, and you don't care. Four of the top five highest home run hitting teams in baseball history came last year. Four of the five. The Minnesota Twins, did you know this, have the most home runs from last year in Major League Baseball history. The 2019 Twins hit 307 home runs, the most in MLB history. The second most in MLB history, last year's Yankees with 306. The third most in MLB history, the 2019 Astros. The fourth most in history, the 2019 Dodgers. And then the fifth most was the 2018 Yankees. Not only did they play the home run card in 1998, Maz, they've been playing the home run card the last couple of years, and no one gives a rat's ass.
Yeah, it's a problem. Is that home runs have become ordinary? They really have. They've become so common, and the thing that's made them common. See, to me, this is where they made a mistake too. I mean, look, they were never going to replicate what they had in '98. Let's start there. That was out. But the problem now is everybody hits them. Everybody does. Christian Vasquez hit 20 home runs last year. And I say this with all the love in my heart because I actually have respect for defense. Okay, I like good defense and I like good catchers and all that. But Christian Vasquez, relative to the great power hitters of all time, sucks. Okay, he had 20 home runs last year. And so, again, now you got teams that build lineups 1 through 9 with the whole idea that everybody takes the same approach. Everybody's going to hit 20 home runs, which is what the Twins did. They're not trying to bunt and move guys along and manufacture runs. Nobody plays that way anymore. So, you know what? You just see the same skill set over and over and over again, which is no skill. Just go up there, swing from your ass, and try to hit it out of the ballpark. That's it. That's the game.
Is there anything out there that would bring you back to the game, folks? Like we came back to the game in the mid to late 90s. Is there anything? It's not home runs. Okay. We've proven that. Do you need a home run chase? If someone sniffed 74 home runs, a record, would that bring you back? If Eugenio Suarez from the Cincinnati Reds, you ever hear of him? Second leading home run hitter in Major League Baseball last year. If he sniffed 74 home runs, would that bring you back? Would a hitting streak do it? Would It couldn't be a strikeout record. Major League Baseball has set strikeout records in each of the last 12 years. 12 years running. 12 years running, they've set strikeout records. Which is all another way of saying introducing steroids back into the game at a massive level isn't going to help. Because what are steroids going to produce? Home runs and strikeouts. You are setting yearly records in home runs and strikeouts. So if you bring steroids in mass back to the game, you're just going to get more strikeouts and home runs. And that's not bringing you back as it is. Do you need a singular star to chase a record? Would that bring you back? If someone sniffed 74 home runs, would you care? Would you come back to the game like you came back to the game in the late 90s? What would bring you back? Would a hitting streak bring you back? Do you young kids even know what I mean when I say hitting streak? Do you even know what that is? If you're under 20 years old and I say this guy went on a hitting streak, do you know what that means? Does Joe DiMaggio on 56-game hitting streak mean anything? What does that mean? Define that. Do you think those young fans can even define what that means?
No.
They probably don't even know who DiMaggio is.
Or are you a modern baseball fan and you adhere to the new baseball metrics and the new baseball analytics that says, well, a walk's as good as a hit. It's on base. It's not about hits. And so you don't even have the guy swinging the bat. That's why we don't have hitting streaks anymore, because a walk's as good as a hit, said the nerd from Yale in the front office. But would that bring you back? What record would bring you back? Would anything bring you back? Like the home run brought us back in the late 90s. That's our jumping off point from that McGuire thing last night. We'll pick that up on the other side. Your call's on it at 617-779-0985. Quick update, no commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.